Hello, beloved listeners, and welcome to another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Kenneth Lesser, thrilled and delighted to be your host again today. And you know, we have a commitment here on Advanced Living Radio to simply bring value to your life, and that comes from a guiding light, from a prayer, a thought form put out into the universe to help be in support of you. And that goes like this, my daily prayer: Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives, so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Yes, that's the goal. And each week, we're privileged and honored to call forth guests who have wonderful value to share in support of our lives. And just thank you for being part of this whole thing and tuning in regularly. It's much appreciated. And as we get into the show today, I want to take just a brief moment to say a thank you to our sponsor, The Comfort Technology. When you go to a website called advancedlivingcomfort.com, you're going to find what some people call a Clark Kent clock with superpowers, which sounds like, what do you mean, Clark Kent clock with superpowers? When you look at it, small, stylish-looking digital clock you'd see on a desktop, nightstand, and a travel bag. But when it's plugged in, it's like changing the energy exquisitely for your well-being. It's like having the Dalai Lama show up and meditate in your room. It takes the energy of the electric world, which is so chaotic and stressful, and brings it into a place of harmony so that we can function at much more of our best and sleep better and think more clearly. So check out advancedlivingcomfort.com and find out why people like Reverend Michael Beckwith or Jack Canfield or Harvard Medical Doctor Eva Selhub and so many more are using it and recommending it. All right. And now, guess what? How about some fun? We all know that we have dreams, and we think to ourselves, yeah, but what about having a few more of our good dreams come true? What can we do about that? Well, I'll tell you, this is your lucky day. We have a guest, and her nickname is Dr. Dream. Her name, Kelly Sullivan Walden, and she has been for years studying and bringing forth some of the best in understanding about dreams and how to use them to our advantage. And she is, of course, helping people as a certified clinical hypnotherapist and is the author of some wonderful, wonderful books. And the one, of course, that is going to be a focus for today is I Had the Strangest Dream. It's the Dreamer's Dictionary for the 21st Century. Yes, and then there's other books. Discover Your Inner Goddess Queen. It's an inspirational journey from drama queen to goddess queen. And one about zone golf, yes. And she's the host of the D-Spot weekly radio web show on the wonderful Awakening Zone, where she expresses the nexus of nighttime dreams, daytime desires, and destinies. And Kelly is featured regularly on Fox, NBC, CBS, ABC News, and magazines such as Cosmopolitan, Elle, Bride, 17, Woman's World, and U.S. Weekly. Gosh, she's everywhere. And you can read her weekly dream blog on AOL.com's MyDaily.com. And she is the creator, founder of the Dream Project. It's a nonprofit organization that involves and brings inspired young people to be solving the issues facing the United Nations and Millennium Development Goals, which are basically to lift humanity. And so for more information about Kelly, there's a wonderful website that's her name, KellySullivanWalden.com, and then Facebook.com, Kelly Sullivan Walden, and Twitter, KS Walden. So, oh my gosh, she's everywhere. Or another Twitter account, Dream Experiment. Well, some years ago, when Kelly became certified as a clinical hypnotherapist, she began working with clients via their subconscious mind to access their core beliefs, drives, and desires in order to more effectively assist them to heal from past traumas and to align with their future goals. Well, over her years working with hundreds upon hundreds of clients, she began to see the impact that their dreams were having on them. When she realized that there were no dream books on the market that really effectively dealt with contemporary symbols or synthesized the realms of dream interpretation in a life-affirming way. And guess what? Yes, into the breach. What she did is she stepped forward and felt compelled to write that latest book of hers, I Had the Strangest Dream, the Dreamer's Dictionary for the 21st Century. Well, Kelly is going to come on now and tell us a bit more about herself and just help us to make our dreams better than we could ever imagine. Welcome, Kelly.
Thank you so much, Ken. Wow, thank you for that lavish introduction. I'm so honored to be on your show today. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. It's just great having you here. And please, before we get started, I know there's more about you. You may want to say a little bit. I know President L.A. Chapter of Women's National Book Association, the Dream Project, some of the things, if we haven't mentioned, please make mention so that people get a little more acquainted with you, would you?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm actually the past president now. I think, I don't know what version of my bio you got. It seems like I have to update things so quickly. Things shift, but I'm the past president of the WNBA, that's Women's National Book Association, not Basketball Association. Two totally different organizations, but it's a wonderful organization that supports literacy and all over the country, and I'm a big part or have been a big part of the LA chapter. And I'm doing all kinds of stuff. One other thing that you didn't mention that is something that will be coming out soon, I'm in a movie called Dreaming Heaven that I think you'd be really interested in, Ken, and you and your listeners. It's about dreaming, but the way in which we dream our lives, because we're all dreaming all the time, even now. It's a collective dream. And it weaves the dreaming mind with Toltec mythology. That's the foundation of Don Miguel Ruiz's work, the author of The Four Agreements.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a documentary based on a sacred journey that myself and several others did in Teotihuacan, Mexico, the ruins and the pyramids there. And it's kind of an awakening journey that deals with the dreaming mind and the ways to be able to wake ourselves up and have a more magnificent dream while we have this opportunity of being alive. So that's something you can find out more about that at dreamingheaven.com.
Okay.
Or I think it's dreamingheaventhemovie.com or dreamingheaventhetrailer.com, something like
okay.
that.
Okay, All right, well, we can Google that, folks. Dreaming Heaven, the mm-hmm. movie or the trailer or, mm-hmm. or
.com. I think if you just go to dreamingheaventhemovie.com, that'll take you to it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, fantastic. And then something very few of us, we have caring hearts. We want the best. And you, in September of 2008, got invited uh-huh. to speak somewhere, and I'd like you
yes.
to mention that.
Thank you. Wow. Yeah, that was one of those pinch me, I think I'm dreaming moments. I was invited to speak at the United Nations, and that was in Paris, France, at UNESCO. It was a big event where I was asked to speak about this project that I created called the Dream Project. And the reason I was asked to speak was because it's kind of revolutionary, the idea of bringing young people into world issues and having them not just theoretically solve problems and be a part of the solution, but actually bring their ideas to the UN and have a voice. And so I created a curriculum that creates this interactive way for kids to be connected to world issues and for them to realize that the United Nations and all the bodies within the United Nations, all the scientists and the government officials and all of the powerhouses that are part of the UN, they actually have one thing missing, and that's the magic and the youthfulness and the awareness that anything's possible that young people have. And that ingredient is like the rocket fuel that the UN needs. So I've created the bridge between young people and the UN. And there's already been a program in existence for quite a while called the Model UN that brings together young people with the United Nations. It's like a mock UN within schools, and sometimes those kids get to actually come to the UN and pretend that they are ambassadors from other countries and learn about these countries and all of this. The distinction between the Dream Project and that is that this my project kind of appeals to the kids that aren't necessarily the A students, mm-hmm. whereas the Model UN appeals to the A students. I appeal to the rebels, the kids that normally just think, well, school isn't relevant for me, I want to get out of here. And I give them a turnaround and get them engaged, not only in school, but in the world. And that seems to be the ripple effect that this program is having. So if you're a teacher, if you're a parent, if you're somebody that cares about your community and you want to get involved, you can go to the website, and it's dreamprojectun.org, and you can find out about how to get involved with a teacher training or to support what we're doing, or you know, contact me at kelly@dreamprojectun.org, and I can help you figure out a way to get involved if you're interested.
Okay. Great. Now, please say the website again and the contact email for you, because this is fabulous.
Sure. The URL is dreamprojectun.org, dreamprojectun.org, and you just, for my email, you just put a Kelly in front of that, Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, at DREAM project, project.org.
UN.org.
Yes, UN. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, if you just do Dream Project, it'll take you somewhere else. But Dream Project UN is our program.
Okay. Ah, that's fabulous. And I'm curious, as the young kids come up with ideas, can you share a little bit about what the pathway is for those ideas to be kind of garnered or gleaned from the youngsters and then brought forward to the people in the UN?
Right. Well, here's at the most basic level, we've created a website that's kind of like our own version of Facebook, where people that are members they have to be approved to be members. So it's usually students or teachers or people that are involved, but really any caring person that really wants to be a part can go to the Dream Project and sign up to be a member. And our members are able to post their ideas, post their blogs, post their videos, and we have ambassadors from the United Nations that on a regular basis go to our website and check out what we're doing, because they know that we encourage young people to post their ideas. So that's the very most basic way that we are a bridge. But in a more fancy way, we could say, there's been some students that kind of crop up each year that are extraordinary, that go above and beyond the call of duty, and that have really shown up as leaders in their community, and they really, and they come up with some great ideas. And for those students, we've been able to, we have the ear of a lot of the local media, like Telemundo and Fox and KTLA, which is an independent news station that's in Los Angeles, and we've been able to bring the news stations to the schools to get to hear what the kids are doing and what they're saying. So that's one way. And then on another level, there's been instances where we've gone to the United Nations and brought students with us to be able to speak. We've had a couple of them that have come up and given speeches at the UN for several minutes, and that, and they're able to have a voice. And then we also, there was an instance where we were invited to go to Honduras to meet the president and the first lady of Honduras, and we were able to bring 10 students from one of the schools in South Central Los Angeles. And those students, and they were ranging in from, they were about, most of them were eighth graders, so they were about 13 years old, and they were all in the hood. South Central is a tough area. Most of those kids had never heard, they had never heard of the United Nations Millennium Development Goals. At the onset of the program, they had no idea, but within not too long, they got immersed and had some great ideas. And one girl named Jasmine, 13-year-old girl, who had been very tough, who was kind of known as the bully, scary girl who was about to get kicked out of school, really had a turnaround experience in the Dream Project and got to see that we, I teach the students that we're all microcosms of the world. So if the world has a, is in a war, that means that there's some place within us that we are warring, or where are you having a war in your own life? And she was able to see, wow, I'm having a war every day. So if I work on my anger issues, then that might have a ripple effect in some strange way in the whole world. So she started shifting. And she had an idea, because she was working on eradicating poverty and hunger in the world, that's goal number one, as well as goal number two, which is about universal primary education. And her idea was, well, the reason there's 100 million school-age children that are not in school is because they're poor, and they have to do chores all day. They have to fetch water, or they've got to, you know, they've got to be out in the fields doing a garden, or not gardening, but doing, you know, working in the fields and helping to get food, or cleaning the house at home. But what if there was some kind of a transistor radio that was solar powered that could have school on the radio every day, where they could, while they're working, have earbuds in their ear and still get to hear things that would educate them? So that was her brilliant idea, and she, that was one of the ideas that was presented in Honduras to the president and first lady. They both took notes, they talked to her afterwards, and they realized this is something that we can do. And they, you know, literally took her down and, like, asked her to keep going, like, what else do you see? And I don't know where they're at in implementing that, but they clearly had light bulbs go on over their head because of this little girl from South Central that had an idea about how to change the world regarding education. So it's, things like that happen with the Dream Project.
Wow, Bailey, this is fabulous. And
thank you, Ken.
And now, just as a segue, you've spent so much time with your involvement. Would you go back and tell us a little bit about how you got involved and what started you with the fascination with understanding dreams?
Sure. Well, I had kind of a rare upbringing. My younger sister and I, I've got three sisters, and we're all close. I'm the oldest of the four girls, but my sister that's closest to me in age, her name's Shannon, her and I shared a bedroom growing up, and her and I have a very interesting psychic connection. We're able to read each other's minds and anticipate each other's thoughts, and we're just very symbiotic, almost like twins, even though we're a year and a half apart. And we would often, over breakfast in the morning, talk about our dreams and realize that we had, on many, many occasions, had the same dream.
Ooh.
Or had been to the same dream locales. Or she would tell me about, oh, I was in this castle and I was running, and I said, oh, and there was a moat and you hid behind it so the witch wouldn't get you. She's like, oh my God, how did you know? That was exactly, and the witch had this big ward on her. Oh, yes, exactly. And she was so scary. But then you flew. Did you fly? Yes, I flew. So we would be like how did you know that? It's like we, and then we would sometimes, even as siblings do, we would argue in our dreams about certain things, and we'd be talking in our sleep, having arguments, or we would be magically traveling. So we just, so I always, from a very young age, was interested in dreams because they were, at you know, at the very least, a source of really incredible entertainment, even more so than the cartoons and television shows we were watching growing up. So
and the partnership with Shannon helped to foster that so much.
Yeah, and I didn't know that that was special, but as I've told people over the years that I had this, and people said, well, I had siblings. We didn't necessarily dream together or dream in tandem or understand each other's dreamscapes, and my sister and I still do. She'll tell me about a strange dream, and I'll say, oh, my God, I have been to that place. Doesn't it smell like there's a lavender scent? She'll be like, yes, oh, my God. So that's part of, that was kind of part of the reason why I've paid attention to them. And then on a more practical level, every time, I mean, there were certain pivotal moments in my growing up years as I was developing relationships with boys or learning about the world. Dreams, I had certain dreams that were really insightful and informative and helped me make important decisions that seemed uncanny. It was like my secret weapon in a way, that I had this source of wisdom. Because, you know, most young girls and probably most young boys as well, there's an enormous amount of insecurity going through adolescence and all of that. And to have something that gives you a source of confidence and strength is kind of precious. And so that was something that I always had growing up. And there was a period of time during my 20s when I completely got, you could say, had my extended dark night of the soul, where I was really out of touch with my soul. Did everything, my life became very externally oriented. I was acting during that time and spending a lot of time really paying attention to the external world, and got away from my dreams. And I realized at some point, I wonder if the fact that I haven't been paying attention to my dreams is related to the fact that I feel so out of touch, period, with God, with my psyche, with my intuitions. Like, where did it go? I'm just blundering through life. And it kind of hit a crisis point where I really then began reconnecting with my dreams, going, you know, doing the whole spiritual path thing where I became a hypnotherapist, learned human design, astrology, Kabbalah, I Ching, chakra system, past life regression, everything I could get my hands on. And, of course, my dreams came back in full force, and they have been. And I became a professional certified clinical hypnotherapist. And as you know, Ken, as you do sessions with people with hypnotherapy or hypnosis, it really starts to help people to pay attention to their subconscious mind, or you pay attention to the messages that are more symbolic in their life. So people would often come to me and tell me about their dreams in sessions. So I started to develop an interest not only in my own dreams, but in other people's dreams as well. And it seemed that people liked my point of view about their dreams. If they had a dream about fire, for example, and they felt really scared about that, I would reassure them and say, fire is a really positive symbol. It represents great change, and change is a good thing. So they go, oh, man, you should write that down. I've never heard that before. You know, I always thought fire was a sign that something really bad is happening to you. And I have a tendency to see that the world is conspiring on behalf of our greatest good, and everything, including our dreams, is part of that energy that's helping us and not against us. And I incorporate that in my point of view. And I eventually wrote my book, and it's done really well. And that sort of brings us to present time.
Yay.
Sort of.
Yes, absolutely. Well, from what you've been able to gather in your work, can you help? Is there a bit of a summary in terms of what you're seeing is why the dream work is so important as an awakening tool?
Yes. Well, it's part of my nature, and I would imagine it's probably part of your nature, and anybody that would listen to a show like this it's probably something that we all have in common, that we're helpful people. We want to have a positive impact on the planet, on the individuals whose paths we cross. And And that's definitely been my story. I've been the Dear Abby type, that people tell me their deep secrets. They tell me about what's really going on with them. And when somebody confides in you something precious like that, to me, I feel like I owe them something. I owe them some insight that's going to be helpful. I don't want to take them backwards, and I don't want to just be a neutral space. I want to be a supportive space. And I found that when people would share a dream with me, more than just telling me about what kind of challenges they're facing or what they're up to in their lives, but if they told me what's going on in their life and they told me a dream, then I felt like, all of a sudden I could see what their own higher wisdom was trying to communicate to them, almost like a translator of their higher selves to them. And I found that when I could show people what I saw, like just how to listen to life symbolically or listen to the dream symbolically, you could start to see the messages over and over and over again. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous that people have these tremendous ahas where they see, as Reverend Dr. Michael Beckwith says, you see a way out of no way. All of a sudden, a path appears where it didn't seem like there was anywhere to go, and all of a sudden, there's clarity. So I see every single dream as having rocket fuel within it that helps us to ignite our awakening, our access to our highest path, our ability to heal the issues that we've been dragging along with us, and ways to be able to have a greater impact on the planet. I feel like our dreams are one of the ways, not the only way, but one of the ways that we all have access to every single day and night that can give us insight that can truly have a beneficial and powerful and very practical impact on our lives if we just take a few minutes out of our day to pay attention to them.
I love it. That's wonderful. So we've established, yes, dreams are really important, and that you're an amazing resource with just innately from your childhood and then all the research that you've done and, mm-hmm. and your new book, which, my gosh, folks, Kelly, my gosh, folks, you're going to discover when you get her book how extensive, how detail-oriented. I mean, you're talking with and you're hearing this charming, playful woman, and you look at her website and, you know, and you go, oh, she takes good care of herself. She's got such a beautiful presence. Well, on top of it all, I mean, the list of things to interpret is like hundreds of pages, I think. It's huge.
It is. Well, the draft that's out there right now has, well, it's almost 400 pages, 385 pages to be exact. But the rough draft, I think the PDF version that you have, Ken, actually has much more than that, because you have the unabridged, unedited version, which has 5,000 dream symbols interpreted. The one that's in paperback has 3,000 dream symbols interpreted. So that's kind of the majority of the book. And then the front part of the book, and the book is called I Had the Strangest Dream, by the way, The Dreamer's Dictionary for the 21st Century. But the front part of the book is about kind of my dream interpretation formula and a context for how to perceive and how to work with dreams.
This is great. Now,
thank
this
you.
Kind of lead. Oh, you're welcome. This leads into some folks will say, you know, well, tell me about your dreams, or
yes.
And I go, I don't remember my dreams.
Yeah, yep. I hear that a lot.
So, what can you share with us about that?
Sure. Well, it's common not to remember your dreams because from a scientific perspective, when we're asleep, when we're actually dreaming, our limbic brain is active, and that's our emotions, and that's connected to our association cortex, where we think symbolically. So our symbolic mind is awake while we're dreaming. But the moment we wake up, our logical mind wakes up, and that part of us, that more synthesizing emotional brain, kind of goes to sleep. So it's like we trade off. We trade off on parts that are awake, fall asleep, and the parts that were asleep, wake up. So our logical brain has no connection with any of that stuff that seemed so valid and so real in our dreams.
Mm-hmm.
I liken it to the concept of having, I don't know if you've ever done this or been on vacation or been on a cruise or something, and this happens, whether it's happened to you or somebody you know, it happens to a lot of people, where you go on vacation and you fall in love with somebody while you're on vacation, and it's like, oh my God, this is the person of my dreams. I love this person. Oh my God, we're going to get married and live happily ever after. And then you come back to dry land, you get back to your ordinary world, and you go, oh my God, what was I thinking? This person is completely wrong for me. This will never work. Has that ever happened to you, Ken?
Uh-huh.
It has. Okay. So what that is, it's like the part of you on vacation is more of the dreamy aspect of you that's more connected to your sensuality, your emotions, and your kind of wild or out-of-the-box way of being. And what makes sense in that world, by the time you get onto dry land, makes no sense at all. The practical, logical, mundane aspect says, oh, that's phooey. That's completely absurd. I'm going to throw that out. So, you know, the goal is to be well blended and integrated so that your subconscious mind and your conscious mind, in other words, your dreaming mind and your lucid waking mind, have a relationship with one another so they're not so split and not so far apart. But most people don't remember their dreams simply because it's their logical mind that they're using when they're awake, and in their logic, from their logic's perspective, their dreams, either whether they remember them or not, just don't really matter. They're just silly. But in actuality, they really are relevant. And I tell people, it's scientifically proven that everyone dreams every night between 3 to 9 dreams a night. Now, if you're taking heavy prescription drugs, or you're drinking lots of alcohol, or you're eating a lot of heavy, heavy foods before you go to sleep, that's going to suppress your REM state, and that's going to have an effect. But most people, on average, dream every night between 3 to 9 big dreams a night, and it can be argued that we're actually dreaming from the moment we close our eyes to the moment we open our eyes. So for those 6 to 8 hours, we are dreaming the entire time. So you can't say you don't dream, but you can say, well, I don't remember my dreams. And if you want to change that, there's some very simple practices that one can do to begin the practice of recalling their dreams and thus benefiting from them. We don't benefit from them as much when we don't remember them.
Right. And can you share maybe a hint or two with us about what that would be?
I'm so glad you asked, Ken. Here's one of my favorite tricks that I can share with people that really works. If here's a general thing is, make sure that you have something to record your dreams on right next to your night, like on your nightstand, a journal with a pen already in it, a pen, if you can get one with a pen light, all the better, because it's such a an easy thing to forget those dreams. If it isn't really easy to record the dreams, if you have to search and hunt and peck for your journal, forget it. By the time you find it, you'll have forgotten it. Or there's so many great there's technology as our friend. If you have on your cell phone, like on mine, I have an app called Evernote. It's a free app, and you can record really easily anything, and it transcribes it so that you can see the written text as well as have the audio. And there's on iPhones, there's an app, a free app called Voice. You could just press that and start recording and just speak your dream into your recorder, or just write it down. But so that's the ideal thing. If you first wake up, like immediately before you go to the bathroom, before you splash any water on your face, certainly before you have any tea or coffee in the morning, write your dreams down while you're still sleepy, while you're in that in-between stage, that hypnagogic state, as they call it. But here's the sneaky trick that I love to give people, because this one really works. If you're trying to remember your dreams and you just can't, then try this. Set your alarm, if you're somebody that needs an alarm to wake up, set it for an hour before you're supposed to wake up. So if you have to get up in the morning at 7 o'clock, set your alarm for 6 a.m. So your alarm goes off at 6 a.m., and hopefully you find the kind of alarm that's pretty, that's like not going to completely wake you up and send you, you know, to the moon in adrenaline, you know.
Yeah.
Hopefully you can find one with Tibetan bells or pretty music.
Okay, so not the theme from Vampire Diaries or something.
Dun, 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 dun. Right. Not the theme from Jaws or
yeah.
I know. Try not to do that. Something pretty, like Enya or something like that.
Yeah, the best of primal scream therapy sessions.
Oh, my God. Cujo, right?
Yeah.
So, oh, my God. So definitely not that, but okay. Something lovely, something pretty to wake you up an hour before. So what's going to happen, you wake up, you're going to turn your alarm off, and then as you lay back down, you're going to say, oh, I want to remember my dreams. I'm going to remember my dreams. In this little window period that you go back to sleep, the moment your head hits the pillow, you're going to start dreaming. But you're not going to be dreaming as deeply as you were in the night. You're going to have more of an awareness of remember this, remember this, remember this, so that when the alarm does go off an hour later, the dreams will be much closer to the surface, kind of like fish that are swimming at the top of the ocean. If you're fishing, they're just easier to catch.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the ones that are swimming way at the bottom of the ocean floor.
Yes.
These will be a lot closer. You can kind of see them, and just you put your net down and you pick them up, and they're right there, easier to catch. So that's one of the things I do. There's a friend of mine that says, I never remember my dreams from the night, but if I wake up in the morning without a dream, which is typical, I lay back down for a little snooze, and I'm able to catch those dreams that come during that little snooze period. Even if it's just a 15 or 20 minute period, there's some dream that he can grab, and that dream is always insightful. So even if you just grab one little dream, one little wisp of a dream, it's valid and it's helpful. Harvard put out a study a couple years ago that basically said, in essence, that any little remembered dream wisp, any little part of it, gives the dreamer, the person that remembered that dream, it gives them a greater degree of intuition throughout the day, better problem-solving abilities, and a greater degree of confidence as they navigate their way through their life that day, as opposed to those that did not pay attention to any dream at all. They were able to measure that in blind studies and amazing studies and get research that says even just a teeny little remembered dream will help you to solve the maze of your life that day with much more acuity. So it's worth it to even do that, even if you don't know what it means.
Oh, okay. And then for someone going, okay, well, here I've got these notes I put on my tape recorder.
Yes.
Some stuff, and then they're going to interpret it. And is it just a matter of going to your book and that big glossary section with all the different words and the meaning? And
sure. Your questions are following this perfect sequence, because this is exactly the next question. Okay, great. I've finally got a dream that I remember. Hallelujah. The angels are singing. It's so exciting. Now what? It doesn't make any sense. So I was playing dominoes with my deceased grandfather. What the heck does that mean? Mm-hmm. So with that, I ask people here's my dream formula. I'm going to give you my formula for how to interpret dreams. I call it the saddle formula, SADDLE. So you can write this across a big piece of paper. This is a little adaptation from what's currently in the book, I Had the Strangest Dream. This is kind of my 2.0 version of how to interpret dreams. So you write the word saddle across the page, SADDLE. And under the S stands for symbol. So you write down all the main symbols, in other words, the nouns of your dream. So do you have a dream, Ken, that I can do this with as an example, or I can just pick one from a dream that I've had recently or any of your callers?
Sure, go ahead from, you know, something that you've had. Or.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, I'll talk about a dream I had last night myself that I actually haven't even interpreted myself yet, so we'll see what happens with this one. So
okay.
I dreamt that my agent, my literary agent, came over to my house, and I've actually never met her in person. We've just been on the phone with each other. And we were in my house, but in my dream it wasn't my house. It was a completely different house. And my whole family lived in the house, which in real life we don't. We all have separate houses, but in my dream we all were under one big roof. It was kind of like this big, long villa. And I was trying to find a quiet space to talk to her, to have a deep, meaningful conversation, but we couldn't find anywhere to go. And finally, I took her into what would be her room. It was like a guest room that she was going to be sleeping in. But my niece, Noelle, had the room a complete mess with candy bar wrappers all over everything. It was just a pigsty, and I was so embarrassed. And I was trying to just shove everything under the bed and clean up the bed and say, here, sit here, Deborah. And I was like, oh, I was so mortified. Okay, so here's some of my dirty laundry. You get more than most people get. Okay, so what I would do with that dream is under the S category, that's the symbol, I would write down words like agent, house, family, bedroom, candy bar wrapper, bed, because it all took place on a bed. So those are the main nouns, the main symbols.
Mm-hmm.
And then the A in saddle stands for association. So this is where you, the dreamer, say, well, what did these symbols mean to me personally? So I know my agent means to me personally. She's a really important person in my life. She just helped me to negotiate a book deal for my next book, and hopefully she'll be my agent for life. And I really want to, I mean, for a writer, your relationship with your agent is a really big deal. So she's an important person in my life, and she represents kind of a gatekeeper to all kinds of things. And I could say the messy bedroom, my association with that is it's kind of like my own inner work that I still have yet to do. Maybe, as I'm just saying this to you now, maybe just the fact that I put an over amount of importance on my agent is part of the mess that I need to clean up, making her too important. Maybe
okay.
I shouldn't have her be so important, you know?
Yeah.
And it also lets me know that I've got some cleaning up to do around intimacy, because the bedroom represents intimacy to me, getting closer to somebody. And often for most of us, the closer we get to any person in a relationship, we often encounter things that need to be cleaned up. You know, old fears, old wrappers from things that shouldn't be there from the past. So to me, that tells me, based on my past, I've got some things to clean up around my relationship with my agent. Because I've had other agents that some worked out, some didn't. So there you go. You're getting some of my dirty laundry. But that is related to my association with those symbols.
Sure.
And then the DD represents Dream Dictionary. And this is where you can use My Dictionary, My Dream Dictionary, I Had the Strangest Dream, or any book of symbols that you like to cross-reference any of these symbols with what it might mean as a larger archetype. So, for example, an agent represents, as a symbol, someone that is your champion. Or a champion, somebody that should be rooting for you. And it's kind of like an aspect of self that is a networker and that's out there. It's more of like if there's many aspects of a self, there's the introverted aspect that doesn't move a muscle, that sits still and meditates. And then there's the part of ourselves that has to get out there and network and market and be our own advocate. It's like an advocate. So as a larger archetype, that's what this symbol represents. And like I said, bedroom as an archetype or as a symbol that would be in my dream dictionary would represent a place of intimacy. Or I would ask the question in that, where are you laying down on the job, or where are you asleep in that area? Because it's, you know, that you sleep in a bedroom. So things like that. And a candy bar wrapper, a candy bar, even just a candy bar, represents sweets or something that's very sweet in life as a dessert or as a reward for having done something well. But this is like an old wrapper, so it, as a larger archetype, it would represent something that used to have value but no longer does. So why is that cluttering up the space? So those are some of the things that would bring up. That's the DD. And the L stands for what's going on in your life. What currently in your life is happening? Like what might have happened just the night before, or what might have happened recently, or why might this dream be relevant to what's happening in your life right now? So you go through that column, looking at those symbols and saying, well, how is this relevant? And I could say for myself, I just had a conversation with my agent recently about my new book, and she said, you know, so I know that that's, so I have a real-life connection with her, and we're in a project together. And my family is also, my parents are in the process of moving, so I know I've got, I'm thinking about them in a new home. So those are some things that relate to what this dream might be giving me some insight into. And then the E in the saddle formula represents emotion or energy. So how did the dream make you feel? To me, I saved the best for last. So the E is actually the most important part. What was the energy of the dream? Was it pleasant? Was it unpleasant? Was it stressful? In my case, it was initially exciting, but then it became stressful because there was stuff that I was embarrassed about that needed to be cleaned up, and I didn't want her to see this stuff. Mm-hmm. So to me, that was an important clue to what the dream was telling me. You could almost forget the rest of the formula and just focus on the energy or the feeling tone or the emotion of the dream, and that will tell you about 90% of what the dream is telling you. So, as in conclusion, for me with this dream, for me, I know that when I turn a book project in, by the time I turn it in, I give myself permission to be a complete mess in the writing of my book. Like I just creatively, I always tell people in your first draft of anything, just be crazy, be wild, be out of the box, be messy, have typos, misspellings, say the wrong thing, just get your first draft done, but then clean it up before you send it to somebody. Make sure that they see your best version because they're going to make a judgment, and if there's somebody that can, you know, make a decision about your career, you don't want to send it to them prematurely. So I know that relates to this project because she's, you know, they're in the midst of reviewing this new project, and so there's some part of me that's like, oh my God, did it, you know, did I send it out prematurely? Mm-hmm. Did I need to clean it up a little bit better? Is it ever clean enough? So there's always, with any creative person, you know, there's always that issue. Like, is it good enough? And people are going to be critical when they see it, and get ready for that and clean yourself up so that it's okay. So that's a little bit about what I tell people to do with their dreams with the saddle formula. Ah. And you also got a window into my psyche. So there you have it.
That's great. And in your book, does it have the saddle thing in it?
That's actually going to be in my new book. And the new book's called It's All in Your Dreams. But what you get in the book that's currently out there is a six-step dream interpretation formula that basically asks you those same questions. I just, as I go along, I like to make things as simple as they can get. So my next book will have things be even simpler. I want things to have the same punch, but I want things to be something that you can remember. And I think an acronym is a more helpful way to remember how to interpret the dream. And the visual that I give people regarding the saddle formula is, think of your dream as not as a domesticated house pet that is supposed to do your bidding, that's going to roll over and beg and fetch your newspaper for you. Your dream is not meant to just do your bidding. Your dream is more like a fiery dragon that you, just like the dragons in Avatar. Did you see that movie, Ken?
Yes.
You want to learn how to saddle up to those dragons and become friends with them because they're an aspect of your power that are mysterious, and they can be a little frightening, they can be a little scary, they can be bizarre, but you want to learn how to join forces with that dragon, saddle up to it, and once you saddle up to it, you can go on a ride on its back and let it take you to where it wants to take you so that it can teach you and show you and illuminate you in the way that your dreams can, beyond what you think they're supposed to do for you and how they're supposed to deliver to you. So that's where saddle comes from.
Wow. I'm just thrilled. I can't help but with my desire to see the connectedness among things is to be listening to you, getting this overview that goes, wow, with all the stuff that's going on in the world, and I mean, it's so much for so many people is literally terror. It's terrible. The people aren't getting their needs met. It's scary, so it's not a surprise folks would be having some dreams that wouldn't necessarily be so pleasant. So one factor is to have someone like you out there going, yes, that's okay. If your dreams are scary, let me show you how to glean the gems out of that.
Absolutely.
Because that's beautiful. And then to connect this somehow, and I know you'll find a way, to the project with the kids. Because that is so huge for them early in their life to be able to hear this and get some tools so that, yes, the scary dream of the monster. I remember in childhood, my gosh, if the closet door was open, something was in there. I had to have the door closed because somehow closing the door, monsters did not know how to work with a doorknob.
It's so true. If you could just shut that closet door, they would never get you.
No.
If it was open the tiniest bit, it was all over.
Exactly.
Oh, it's so funny. That's so funny. One thing I like to tell people, and this is something that I was a speaker at a conference a couple weeks ago on dreams at the IASD, the International Association for the Study of Dreams. And one of the things that I thought I was kind of alone in this, but it turns out I'm not. Most of the people that I became acquainted with there that are very intelligent and have been in the realm of dream research for many, many years, when we all talked about nightmares, there wasn't one person that didn't say this. The collective consensus of these dream experts all said, they're such good dreams. Nightmares are so good. In fact, one guy named Craig Webb said what he tells people when they have a nightmare is, lucky you. Lucky you. Two words for you when you have a nightmare, lucky you, because your nightmare is an unfinished dream, and your nightmare is helping you to dredge up the stuff that you've been, that's been hidden in your blind spot, that's been keeping you stuck or keeping you small or keeping you fearful, and it's revealing itself to you so that you can now work with it. You can do something with it. If the quote-unquote enemy is hidden in your blind spot, then you're kind of a victim to it. But if it's in plain view, then that means it's 90% healed or flushed out. So now the last little bit is you doing work with that nightmare, you taking that scary image and finding a way to befriend it or to use some dream alchemy. I call it dream re-entry, to go back into the dream, whether in a meditative state or back into the dream as lucidly as you can. From a meditative state is more likely with most people, which is valid and wonderful. You go in and reimagine that you're back in the dream, but this time you're in control. You're the director of the dream, and the dream isn't over until you're victorious. You're on the mountaintop. You're in your power. So if you're being chased by a scary creature and it's your dream, you might say, wait a minute, I'm going to stop running and turn around and say, excuse me, why are you chasing me? And demand that it answer you. And often when we do this, I won't say every time, but most times what happens is the scary creature completely alters into something much more kind or soft. And it says, I'm not the scary creature. I'm trying to give you a gift and you keep running from me. So I have to chase you harder and faster until you receive this, because this is important for you to know. I'm a part of you, and I want to be part of the ride. And I'm offering you a brilliant point of view that you just refuse to listen to. And every once in a while, we're afraid that these scary creatures are going to, if they catch up to us in our dreams, that they're going to kill us. And sometimes when we turn and face them, they do kill us. But there's a saying that I say about dreams, that which doesn't kill you makes you stronger, and even that which does kill you can't kill you because you're immortal. You're an infinite being. So if it quote-unquote kills you, that means, okay, that's the end of one particular incarnation of your being. It's the end of one chapter of your life, which means a new chapter is about to be reborn. So give thanks, say your gratitude for that previous incarnation of you, and now begin to become prepared for what's next. For example, I mentioned Reverend Dr. Michael Beckwith earlier in this interview. He had a dream where this happened, where he'd been, a recurring dream where he'd been stalked by these people that had knives, or I think it was guns, I'm not sure. Either way, they finally caught up to him after, I don't know, a year or two of chasing him in his dream. And they did, one of them shot him in the chest, and it exploded his chest, and he died in the dream. And immediately following that dream, he began having, that was the beginning of his true spiritual awakening. He began having visions of agape, that's the church that he runs. He began having insights about life beyond death. He began to have insights about the true nature of the divine and how it operates within the realm of human. So it was an initiation dream. So this thing that seems so horrible, once faced and embraced, and I say the formula for how to deal with fear, F-E-A-R, is to face it, embrace it, ace it, and replace it.
Wow, Kelly, this is exquisite. We've blazed through our time, and I feel like we've just had the appetizer. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, we'll get to the main entree next time.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Such a pleasure, Ken. Thank you. You're a wonderful host, and so grateful to be connected with you, and I hope to do it again sometime, whether in the dream realm or in this realm or all of the above.
Okay. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you,
you, sweet one, and to my beloved listeners. God bless, and goodbye for now.
Let go and let God. Cut myself loose and let go of